The Swans, they've done it again. They've trolled us, hoodwinked us. They're playing with our hearts like a tiny violin.
It was my understanding that everyone had heard.
Heard what?
Ryan, don't!
A well, a bird, bird, bird. A bird, a word, a well, a body. A bird, a word, a well, a body. A bird, a word, a well, a body. A bird, a word.
Well, about Franklin, he's in the team after being categorically ruled out. He's in. This is the Swans Box, Swans Cast Extra, the number one Sydney Swans fans weekend preview podcast.
Yeah, I ruled him out on Monday. That's how unusual the injury was. And he had a scan again on Tuesday and surprisingly showed that it was getting better really quickly. And then again Wednesday and got better and better during the course of the next couple of days to the point that he was able to train.
In this week's episode, we will preview the Swans match against Fremantle, discuss Franklin's shock selection with Hanbury, what we're looking forward to, matchups, key points, team changes, give our predictions, and the weekend forecast. I'm Justin Mitchell, and with me is Heather Quinlan, Swans Cast regular. Heather, talk about shaking this up at the selection table.
Well, it was quite exciting, actually, to see when the team selections came out. To see the Franklin name on there, obviously nobody was expecting it, and while I like to not hark back to the dark old days of the 1990s when teams used to select ridiculous teams and put ridiculous matchups down on the sheet and expect people to believe it, and they never did, of course. Nothing ever sort of panned out the way it was selected on a Thursday night. I thought we'd passed those days, but maybe we haven't, because we've got some pretty interesting stuff going down here, and I've got a bit of a conspiracy theory about it all. Have you got one about what's
no,
occurred?
No, but I would love to hear your conspiracy theory.
Well, my conspiracy theory is this. I reckon John Longmire must be on the way out the door at the Swans. My big prediction is he must be getting the giant boot from the Swans. How do I reckon I know this? Because if he had even, you know, a slight in with the medical team, surely the medical team would have advised him that Franklin actually wasn't that far away, as opposed to him coming out on the media, out in the media on a Monday, categorically ruling him out on a Monday.
Yes.
For the Saturday game, and basically insinuating that he would miss at least another couple of weeks. So clearly, old horse has been kept totally in the dark by the medical team. If I was horse, I'd be a bit worried about my job at the end of the year. That's my conspiracy.
I'm a bit worried about the medical team. Oh, look, if we had a Thursday rant off, I think that would be the perfect one. But yeah, geez, treatment of injuries and diagnosis and returning timelines and everything's just been a bit all over the place. Like, Sam Reed is still listed as 6 to 8, despite the fact that the Swans Twitter feed today said that he's still 4 to 5. God, he's been the longest 6 to 8 week I've ever seen in my life. But yeah, it's all over the shop at the moment. But look, let's kick straight on into top of the agenda for today's show. Clarko on the weekend, he went a bit crazy, Heather. Do you think he went a bit crazy?
Yep. Alistair Clarkson has been known to slam his hand through the odd coach's box wall. And I think he had one of those, metaphorically speaking, because he lost the plot when the Swans beat Hawthorn the other night and had a bit of a whinge about blocking rules. And there was much hilarity played out among Sydney supporters, of course, because the hypocrisy of Alistair coming out with that kind of line when we all know that blocking and doing all manner of interesting things to win a free kick has just been part of the Hawthorn arsenal for the last sort of, you know, six, 7 years, really.
It really has. They were the team that really founded that and started playing with that style, going all the way back to pretty much 2008 or even earlier. But the what I found almost comical about the whole situation was the fact that with these discussions, the umpires, or at least the CEO, was giving guidance to the umpires to go back to basics. I couldn't really believe what was actually published on Monday was that the umpires have been instructed to watch the contest after disposal where the ball was, and then watch the contest where the ball is travelling to instead of watching the ball. I just couldn't believe that, because when I was umpiring, that was the fundamental that you learned and were taught, that you had to watch the contest and the next contest. You don't watch the ball in the air, you don't watch the crowd, you don't have a chat to the players while the game is still in play.
Yeah, it does seem a bit quite basic, doesn't it? But my understanding, is that this is something that had been brought up earlier in the season when there were potentially another, there was another similar kind of issue arose with another team, I guess. But there was a bit of a hiatus for a while, and then after the Swans game, obviously, Clarko sought out specifically Gillon McLachlan to have a chat over a coffee and bend his ear about blocking. And then magically, and coincidentally, this edict has come down to the umpires to be more on the ball with how they police this particular thing. Now, blocking is essentially illegal, so we're all happy with that, but it does have to be umpired consistently every week.
It's not there. I would say blocking is the least of the issues as far as umpiring consistency goes. I know Matt Stevic gets a lot of finals and a lot of grand finals, but if you're watching from a bird's eye perspective, his consistency isn't very good at the moment. He's all over the shop. And some of the umpires, I can't remember the chap who was involved in the Carlton and Essendon game on Saturday afternoon last week. He had a deplorable first quarter. He gave away a 50 against Carlton when it was actually an Essendon player that infringed. He paid the free kick the wrong way, and he paid marks off other people's hands. It was quite an embarrassing performance to watch that sort of thing. I'm all for the umpires resetting the basics. Absolutely, 100% there. I think there's more issues than just blocking. So that's my perspective on that.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. And I think you'll find that umpire that you were talking about from that game is probably umpiring the Essendon under-9s this weekend, so I'm not sure we have to worry about him. And also, I might add here, and you'll probably never hear me say this again, but I think Ray Chamberlain is probably one of the better performing umpires at the moment, if you can believe that.
Agree. I'm actually looking forward to him coming in. I've wanted him to umpire Swans games for a while. I've been talking off air with a couple of people about the umpiring in general, and there is a bit of discussion about trying to do a special podcast about umpiring and where it's at. I'll give you a quick thought on Ray Chamberlain and we'll move on to the next thing. I think he's great. I think he's probably the best umpire in the AFL at the moment. But from my experience as an umpire, they aren't going to give him big games because he's a bit eccentric. He's unpredictable. He's a little bit inconsistent as far as the way he acts, and you don't know what you're going to get with him. I think that's the exciting part with him, because he's happy to chat to players, and he's happy to be a bit, I wouldn't say fruity, but excitable and cheery and happy, where everyone else looks a bit serious, a bit wooden, and a bit robot-y. But you need that. You need characters. And he's a great character, and he's a great decision-maker, and he's a great umpire, but he's inconsistent, and the umpire don't know what they're going to get with him. But umpiring, I could chat about it for hours, and we're going to be stuck here with a very long podcast if I do. So I think we just get straight into the team changes, Heather.
Yes.
Would you like to kick us off with the first team change?
Well, the first change that we have, of course, is that Lance Franklin in. And look, we've got Dean Towers going out. I picked Dan Robinson to go out, but Dean Towers has made way for Franklin. And I mean, Towers is a bit unlucky, but look, when you're faced with a $10 million man, there's probably no surprises there. I'll be very interested to see. And of course, Dan Hannabury is in as well. And we had felt that was the case because he's been knocking on the door now for probably a week and a half.
Yeah.
My only comment, I guess, about the other than what I've already said and my radical conspiracy theories is that I really hope that Franklin is actually physically in good shape enough to make an impact in this game, because if he actually comes in and does diddly squat or his version of not much, I'm not sure that that's going to benefit the team, because one of the things that we're going to talk about is the need for Sydney to score and hopefully score big.
Yep.
And if he is restricted in any way or not quite 100%, I'm not sure how he's going to be of benefit. But look, let's think positive here, and I'm sure that, you know, probably there might even be an extra 5,000 turn up to the match, so let's hope for that.
Yeah, look, it's an interesting one, and you're right. If he doesn't perform, or if he looks restricted, or if there's any issues whatsoever, it's going to reflect really poorly on the coaches, but also on the medical team who are managing him and giving the coaches the information that they need to make selections. If he's running around and looks like he can't break into a sprint, forget it. I mean, what's he going to do, just sit it full forward and hope to kick a bag? he'll get defeated or overcome by his opponent pretty quickly, I would think. But the other in is the one we always expected. It was pretty much earmarked at the start of the week, and that's Hanbury, and he's come in for Dan Robinson. Now, we've spoken about this offline. Dan Robinson was the obvious choice to come out. Obviously, we're a little bit surprised by Dean Towers, but I'm glad that Hanbury's back because it's going to free up players like Jack, like Heaney, Mills even to some extent, and even Jones and Hewitt to do a little bit more of what they're doing. Same with Parker.
Yeah, I agree, Justin. Again, though, without wanting to sound like a broken record, Hanbury has not been playing to his usual standard this year. he has suffered from injuries a bit over the last couple of years. I would like to see him actually be able to come out and have some sort of impact, even if it's, well, only for half or three quarters of a game. But we'd like to see a bit of dash, a bit of run from him, and a bit of his great ball use, rather than really some of the quite pedestrian stuff that we've seen from him when he's clearly been restricted in his running. So again, if you're going to select him, let's see the great Dan Hanbury that we know and love.
Yeah, absolutely agree with you. His last couple of games are very, very flat, and it was very much like Kieran Jack last year. So I'm glad the club's actually taken a bit more of a pragmatic and conservative approach with him. And that's something that I know the two of us were discussing even on the last couple of podcasts, was the fact that they shouldn't have brought him back so quickly because he just didn't look fit. But yeah, look, the preview of the match actually has pretty much changed on the spot, I think. We had, for those that listen, so basically we actually prepare a lot of this content beforehand on the proviso that team selection, so they don't really get surprises or do any serious shakeups. But as far as the Franklin call goes, this is about as big as a shakeup as I've seen for quite a few years. Now, their history between the sides is, you'd think it would be a bit Sydney lopsided. Certainly in the AFL article today, it suggested as much. They've gone a lot further back in history than I have, which I would say is probably not really relevant. As far back as I've gone is just 2010. And look, obviously the Swans, you know, they spanked them last time they played, Heather. Kicked 8-2 in the first quarter. They never headed at halftime. They were 13-6 to 1-3, and it was just pretty much pedestrian. They just walked out the result after that point. And we also had 12 goal kickers. So, like, last time I thought it was really good. But look, some of the head-to-head is the fact that the Swans won 3 of the last 5. They've also won 3 of the last 6 at the SCG since 2010, but there is a draw. They have won 6 from 12 with one draw between the sides since 2010, so they're basically 6-5. And look, the interesting one is the fact that Sydney hasn't beat Fremantle under lights since 2008. Heather, have you got any more to add to that?
Well, no, that's a pretty comprehensive wrap-up. I guess I'd just make the point that in that match last year when the Swans went obviously completely berserk, Franklin did play. I'm not sure how many he kicked. We didn't actually research that because he thought he wasn't playing.
3 or 4 from top of my head. It wasn't a bag. He didn't kick a bag. But we had 12 goal kickers.
Yeah, and look, we would like, you'd like to think that having Franklin in the team would actually add to the Sydney's capacity to, you know, kick a winning score. I did watch that draw and it was horrific. So please, let's avoid that at all costs. Is there anything worse than a draw? I'm not sure that there is. Yep. So let's move right along. I guess now to the matchups.
Yeah, look, could you please kick it off with your first matchup, Heather?
Well, my first matchup is, and can I just say, let's give Frio the heave-ho this weekend. I reckon big sinkers, Callum Sinclair versus Big Sandy, I reckon that's going to be a top contest. And the reason why I'm saying this is because obviously Sandilands is the biggest ruckman going around, 211 centimetres, and Sinker's only 200. But here's the deal. This season, Callum Sinclair's been having a really good year. He, in terms of fantasy points, if that's your thing, he's on 99.5 versus Sandy's 82. So in terms of his effectiveness around the ground, he is proving that he is up to AFL standard, and good on him.
Oh, no question. If we're
looking at the head-to-heads here, this season, we're talking versus Sandilands, more inside 50s, more tackles, more disposals, More contested possessions, and look, on the downside, I guess more turnovers, but it's not massive. Yep. It's only one extra per game. Now, Sandy's having 41.6 hit-outs average per game compared with Sinclair's 35, but I would put it to you that Sinclair is not really a specialist ruckman, although he's been made into one. And so there's not actually a huge discrepancy there. And I really like this matchup, and I just think with Sinclair being in form, I think that it's going to negate Sanderlin's impact on the game. That's my take on it.
I completely agree. I think it's going to be an important matchup, but Sinclair's form has pretty much allowed him to, have more of an impact around the ground. And it was a really interesting matchup against McAvoy last week, because McAvoy had him nudged a little bit, just a tiny bit, in the AFL Fantasy and also Dream Team in that, like, just like a slither. And he had, I think, four more disposals, but they were pretty much neck to neck. And Sinclair actually finished with more hit-outs. That was one thing I couldn't actually believe, is the fact that he's actually having far more impact on the ruck this year than he was last year. Probably three or four-fold of an impact. So I think athletic-wise, he's definitely fitter, faster and stronger than he was last year. So I reckon he stands a good chance on this one, Heather.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what's your first matchup there, Justin?
Well, we don't really know if he's going to play or not, but even if he does, I think we still have to go with this plan, and that's George Hewitt, the number one shutdown player, on Nat Fyfe. And look, as far as superstars go, Nat Fyfe is in ripping form, red hot. Potential Brownlow favourite is what a few are bandying around, and he has been sensational for Fremantle, and the reason why they're 4-4. So it's up to Hewitt. It is beholden on him to shut Fyfe down.
And what's the situation with Nat Fyfe? Why is he sort of not automatically into this game?
Well, I'm not too sure the specifics, but the rumour or scuttlebutt is that he did pick up a bit of an injury during the week, and he did travel with the team, but it's kind of looking a bit like the Hanbury situation, where a late fitness test will rule him in or out. So there is some rumour and chatter that he might be out. But hey, it could just be innuendo and rumour and locker room talk, given that Franklin was selected, so you really don't know.
No, you don't. So let's assume that he's going to play and he's going to be dangerous, because we all respect Fyfe, I think it's fair to say.
Absolutely. Now, Heather, which is your second matchup of the night?
Well, this one is a little bit controversial, because we're really not sure who the 200 gamer Nick Smith is going to be playing on, and he could actually match up on really realistically probably three or four different Freo players.
Yep.
But I must just put my hand up here and say Nick Smith is a personal favourite in my household. He's playing his 200th game this weekend. Special shout out to Nick Smith. We love Smooch. He's pretty handsome, as well as being a very good player. And
Kate's favourite as well?
He's my daughter Kate's absolute favourite. She's been in love with him since she was about 15, so she's now 20.
Lock her up, keep him away.
That's right. We have a special affinity with Nick Smith in my household. And look, I reckon he might spend some time on Hayden Ballantyne. And Justin, I know that you believe that Ballantyne is well past his best. Actually, so do I. But at times, he can be quite annoying in many ways, but quite annoying in the respect that he can, he can sneak in the odd goal. He is a bit of a sneak, really.
Yeah.
Full stop, all over the ground. He's got that sort of dangerous ability just to bob up and cause a bit of havoc. And in the past, he's been an absolute thorn in Sydney's side. He caused a virtual riot at the SCG a few years ago, and primarily caused the Sydney Swans to lose that game because they were completely distracted by Hayden Ballantyne and forgot to win the game. So I reckon Nick Smith's going to do a bit of a job on him. I would say that Ballantyne hasn't been in superb form. He's averaging 1.1 goals this year per game.
Yeah.
4.9 score involvements. That's okay. 11.6 disposals. You could be doing better. I'd be backing Nick Smith to take the money in this, because he's very reliable. There's very few peaks and troughs with Nick Smith's game. It's pretty steady. So I'm backing Nick Smith to shut down Hayden Ballantyne, and hopefully shut his mouth as well.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And look, Michael Walters isn't in as well, so is Hill. So you're right, there's probably three, if not four, players he could go to. And look, my last matchup is obviously the head-to-head in the midfield. It's got to be Luke Parker on Lachie Neale. Lachie Neale has been in good form, really, really good form. He's winning a lot of the ball, and he's leading that midfield with Fife. And Luke Parker, he's been a bit up and down, a bit mixed, I would say, throughout the season. But look, he's returned to form, and let's hope that is an actual return to form, not a little tiny purple patch in the middle of a teacup storm. And look, we need Luke Parker at his best, but we need to shut down Lachie Neale or at least negate him.
Oh, 100%. Isn't he averaging? He's averaging virtually 32 disposals a match. Well,
big numbers. Big numbers.
Big numbers. And I think, in fact, he was leading that statistical category at the end of last season for Fremantle. Yeah. So he is quite prolific and really one of their very quality players. And, geez, I hope Luke Parker has a red patch and not a purple patch, though, Justin.
Hey, if he's red hot at the end of the match, he can get my five and the coach's 10. But, look, Lachie Neale's definitely been factoring in the coach's votes. He'll probably be top three or top four on their best and fairest at this point. I would be surprised if he isn't, because he has been a very good player for them for an extended period of time. But look, I guess for a couple more facts before we move on to our key points. So the Swan small forward line of Hayward, Ronk, Papley, Jack, Parker and Florent have kicked 44 goals between them. Franklin's kicked 18. So look, the match against Hawthorn did not have a spread of goal kickers. There was actually three for the Swans. It was Parker 2, Hayward 3, Ronk 7. And Hawthorn had four. So we need a little bit of a spread there, but I like what the Smalls are doing. The average for and against for both teams are pretty much about the same, and the Swans have only lost two away games since round 7, 2017, but 9 of 16 at home since the start of 2017. So we really need to fix things up there, Heather.
100%. And if I could just actually move into my first key point of the actual upcoming match for the weekend. we really need to find a way to score a bit more. We're looking for a few more ronks to cut Bob up and, you know, at least kick two or three, maybe six or seven would be very terribly yeah. nice. But look, you mentioned before that this game last year that Fremantle we absolutely smashed by more than 100 points. We actually, the winning margin was more than 100 points. I think this weekend we actually need to score 100 points. Yeah. I think you'll find that we haven't often achieved that thus far over the first seven rounds. That we might have done it once or twice, but certainly we've had some pretty low scoring kind of affairs, this is just an opportunity, I think, particularly with Franklin back, is to actually kick a bit of a score and really just find a way, because it hasn't been good in at their home games this season. I think we're one of three, yeah. aren't we? One from four
this season. We were one from six last year. So it's not the end of the world. It's not total panic stations. But if we're losing this game, I think finals might be a little bit out of the question, or at least top four. We can't be losing this and finishing top four. I don't think it's possible.
No.
Yeah.
No. All right. What sort of key point are you looking at?
Look, I kind of touched on this briefly before with Hewitt, but I just like to sort of go over the fact that Nat Fife is playing. Bit of another alliteration. I'm getting about one an episode and sounding a bit ditzy here, but Nat Fife is playing career best football at the moment, and the Swans either have to shut him down or negate him. He has been red hot, and look, if the Swans even just go head to head and block up the runners, someone like a Lachie Neale or the Hill brothers, if they're both playing, I know Stephen Hill's in, if they can, and especially Michael Walters, if they can shut them down on the outside, even if he picks up 30 and 13 or 14 contested, it's not going to matter too much. They just need to quell him or block his influence. That is key to victory, in my opinion. And Heather, what is your second key point to victory?
Well, I was having a look at the ladder, and the ladder is telling us that the Sydney Swans are seventh at the moment. That's not so bad. We've obviously won five matches out of our eight, which isn't too bad. There's a bunch of teams in exactly the same position. The reason we're seventh is that our percentage is essentially poor. It's not that much over 100, but I think it's about 103% or something. It's not great, 106%. It's not great. And in my opinion, this is what gets teams into trouble towards the end of the season. You may remember last year that the Demons had a poor percentage. They were in a position where they could have made it into the top eight, but then they managed to lose a game just by, like, not much, but their poor percentage.
Yeah.
They slipped out of the eight right at the death. It must have been very painful for all the players who were busting their backsides. But the reality is that some of their terrible results early in the season came back to bite them on the backside later on. And I think that this is an opportunity for the Swans to go, you know what, we can work up our percentage here, we can improve it, and really just make a bit of ground on some of those other teams that we're sort of caught up in. What do you think?
I agree. I think you could also apply that to the Swans last year. They really suffered from their start. Obviously, winning 14 from 16 helped them get into a position to actually make the top four. But in the end, they were too far off percentage-wise from Port Adelaide to be able to get in. Richmond was ahead. So you never know. Like, the percentage is obviously critical at the tail end of the season. And it's 2016, we snuck in and we finished first based on percentage. We actually needed results to go our way, but that's just how important percentage is. So in the end, it really makes a difference, I think, between a potentially top six, top four, or even top eight, and where you actually finish and what opportunity you get for finals.
I think so too, and I think that, sorry to interrupt there, and I think that the Cats, Geelong at the moment, they're also on 20 points. I think their percentage is 123, and they could be in third. So I think that that just, I mean, it's still early in the season, but I just wouldn't want to see the Swans just being pushed out of either top four or, God forbid, out of the finals altogether based on a poor percentage. And I think this is, I think that, that this weekend provides a great opportunity.
Yeah, I agree. But they're not going to be an easy team to beat, I think. So it's going to be a risky game. And look, for my second one, we've talked about this offline, and I think we both agree with this one, but the Swans simply have to find a way to score at home. Fremantle, they are going to fly back, and they're going to defend 18 behind the ball, because it's worked for every other team. North Melbourne did it, Adelaide did it, Port Adelaide did it. It's worked. So they need to find a way to score, even with 18 players in their defensive, or for the Swans, their forward 50. So maybe having Franklin back will take the pressure off Hayward, who's been sensational in his absence. It might give Ben Ronk more opportunity, Kieran Jack as well. Maybe Luke Parker will keep kicking goals, one or two a game. So there's opportunity for other players to contribute. We just can't score 60 or 70 again for the fourth time this season at home. It's just not going to work. Not going to get close to winning for kicking 60 points.
No, I totally agree with you. But I think it's, we may be on the same page here, but I think that the best way to really, well, give a team second thoughts about doing that is actually to just play with some flair, play with some an attacking frame of mind, take opportunities to bust your way through the middle, break a few lines, bomb the ball in, you know, get a few people busting their lungs to run back towards goal. You know, you break through the lines a few times and you score a few easy ones with some, you know, well, is that easy? I mean, you work hard to make those opportunities to bust the lines, maybe play with a little bit of dare, a bit of flair, a bit of attack, you know, up the middle instead of, you know, the safe and easy route along the boundary line. Bust them open a few times and they won't be so keen to flood back 18 because they'll get broken open. So that would be my thought.
It really depends whether or not they go a seven-player defence, and if the Swans want to man them up and have a seven-player forward line, and then all of a sudden that space is choked up. One of the things that the SCG has over other fields is the fact that it's wide, so the Swans can exploit that, trap them out wide, and then just go inside quickly and fast and long as well, long and direct. That would be probably my hope. I don't know if they'll do it, but that's what I'd like the Swans to do.
Yeah, same here. And look, I would say that since the Swans have acquired a bit of pace through the middle, I think that they're kind of working out how to play their own home ground
yep.
properly. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. And I do have enormous respect for Fremantle and for their coaching staff there. So I'm sure that they'll try and beat Sydney at their own game. But look, I've just got the feeling that this is the weekend when the Swans are finally going to take their home ground opportunity, Justin.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, they really have to. Now, let's look at the predictions from last week. So, I'll just quickly go through them. I think we actually did quite well. So, Stephen, his first prediction was Kennedy will win the centre clearance count. He certainly did. My first one was smashing Sinclair. Sinclair to rack up 18 disposals and 5 clearances. Didn't quite. He was 4 off and I think 1 or 2 clearances off. Stephen's second prediction was Ruffhead will kick 4 goals. He only kicked 1, and that was the first minute of the third quarter. And the last one was Young Stars lead the way. 6 goals between Hayward, Papley, Ronk, and McCartan. I think I nailed that one on the head about
Justin, you're
2/3
of
the way into the second quarter. Not even half time, 6 goals. Thank you, Ronk. I actually didn't have Ronk in it to begin with, so... But I was very, very happy with that one. Now, Heather, would you please kick us off with your first prediction this week?
Yes, I've got it. My prediction is Josh Kennedy, our esteemed captain, to have a 30-plus disposal game and to kick a goal, at least one goal.
That's
and
a good game.
The reason for my prediction is that I just feel that Kennedy is a good man. He was well held the other night. He really didn't have a massive influence. I think he's going to bust out of that, and I think he is, in fact, going to assert his influence over the game. And yep. I think that there'll be a fair bit of attention given to Fife and Neil, and I think that'll... I'm liking to think that he is going to actually going to, he's actually going to really stand up, because I think he's a proud man, and I'm not sure that he's been overly happy with his inconsistent form this season.
Well, even Longmire said that Howe went to him and did a really good shutdown job. So I think without Hanbury being there in the middle, he's getting a lot more attention than he normally would. And same with Parker. So I think that form, that inconsistent form, is probably attributed to the defensive tactics of the other coaches.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And what's your first prediction?
Well, I'm going Parker beast mode. He's going to pick up 10 clearances, 10 contested possessions, and 7 tackles. Well, at least the minimums of each. I didn't go the triple-double. That's more of a basketball kind of term, but at least 10, 10, and 7. That's what I think he's going to do.
Wow, I'd like to see that. And I'm going to the game, Justin, so I'm looking forward to seeing that in person.
Well, hopefully they win for you this time, because how far is it? How long do you have to drive?
It's 5.5 hours from where I live. Ouch. To the SCG, and that's with a very short stop for a cup of tea and a quick visit. So otherwise it's a bit longer. And, of course, if the Sydney traffic is anything, you know, if it turns ugly, it could be more like 6 hours. But, yeah, it's a long way to go for a game of footy, but I love to do it for my Sydney Swans.
All right. Now, Heather, what is your second prediction?
Well, this is a pretty obvious one, and look, I suspect that this is, in fact, probably some people would even consider it to be not a prediction, but in actual fact just a standard sort of performance. But my prediction is that Hayden Ballantyne will do a lot of yapping to the opposition and basically try and rile up the Swans every which way that he possibly can, because he would feel that it's worked in the past, and if he can distract them enough, it may be enough to put them off their game. So my tip is that we'll see a bit of action from Hayden Ballantyne on Saturday night.
A bit of a vis-a-vis Stevie Baker kind of performance, you think?
Something like that. Something like that, only with less class.
Well, it depends on what perspective. Perspective always counts.
Absolutely. Oh, dear. What about you, Justin?
Okay, this is a big one. And look, on a really good night for Nick Smith, he's playing his 200th match, for those that don't know. And the other important one is the fact that Kennedy is actually playing his 200th match for the Swans. So he's played 200 odd. So it's pretty big milestones for both players. I'm going with rookies lead the way. 3 rookies to receive coaches' votes. So there are quite a few on the team. Half the team is rookies. So I think I'm in with a chance on that one.
Yeah, that's a good one. I really like that. That's I'd love to see it. Love to see the young guys sort of do well.
Well, we've got Smith, Rampy, and Grundy are rookies from defence. Lloyd, I can't remember if he's a rookie. I think Lloyd was a rookie. Obviously, Ronk is a rookie. Kieran Jack's a rookie. The list just goes on. I could be here for the next 2 minutes rattling them off. But look, the weekend forecast now, Heather. Do you have a sure thing for the weekend ahead?
I have a sure thing. The Swans will beat Fremantle by at least 5 goals. And I'm I'm thinking more like 7 or 8, but I've gone conservative. Beat them by 5 goals or more.
Ideally, I'd like 70 or 80 points, but yeah, 5 goals, I like it.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's I think you might have the most at stake.
I do. I think the most at stake for the Swans going ahead this week is the home ground support. I'm not quite sure the fans will keep turning up on cold, wintry, wet nights if the Swans aren't winning games or at least performing well. And I guess that goes back to what I'm saying with the Swans. They just can't keep scoring 60 or 70 points a match. So, yeah, that's my most at stake, Heather.
Yeah, and I think you're right in two respects there, because if Fremantle do as we expect and try and get 18 behind the ball, potentially there is the potential there for it to be a bit of an ugly game, and we have seen already a couple of those this season. So I think it's incumbent on the Swans and the coaching staff to come up with the quote unquote plan B for that.
Yeah.
And really come to play, because I think this is an opportunity for them, for the Swans, to come up with a sort of improve their winning percentage. And you're right, potentially people like me who drive a long way to get to a game will be turned off in future games if they feel like not only are they going to lose, but it's going to be really ugly.
Yeah, look, the game plan that they're playing at the moment has changed. It's very different to what it was 2 years ago, and it's clearly working away. There is no question. It's just that the home form hasn't followed, so they need to win. Now, Heather, your doomsday scenario, I believe you have one?
Yes, I do. It's actually not Swans related. People might be aware that for the second year now, two Australian AFL teams are going to be playing off in China. AFL trying to obviously expand its audience and its reach worldwide. An interesting and brave concept, and I think it's fantastic. Unfortunately, the two teams involved, Gold Coast and Port. Port have been the superior team to the Gold Coast really quite consistently now, well, for some years. Gold Coast have had their fair share of problems, and last year Port beat Gold Coast in that China match. Well, I can't remember the score, but look, I know that I turned
about
off.
About 120 points or something silly like that.
I think I turned off in the second quarter because it was really boring, because they were winning by so much. So my doomsday scenario is that the Gold Coast, who are not going well again this year, get absolutely slaughtered by Port again, which, frankly, people in Australia won't watch that kind of thing, so I just can't imagine how Chinese people would want to watch it.
Yeah, look, the AFL's actually put out figures that they expect it to be the most watched game this year. I don't know where they're coming up with these predictions or forecasts from, because no one wants to watch Gold Coast and Port Adelaide. I think last year it was more like let's see what they're doing in China. And about 5 minutes in, it's like, okay, then I think I'm going to watch Home and Away or something else. It was a truly dreadful spectacle, unfortunately.
Yeah, it was. And I think that too, because they're having to use sporting grounds that aren't probably, ideally suited to AFL. So they're having to make some compromises in that respect. And I've got I really respect the clubs and the AFL for getting involved in an initiative like it. It that's not really the issue. I guess it's more the fact that, unfortunately, for reasons that potentially only the clubs themselves and the AFL know, the two teams that are involved at the moment, there's a bit of a disparity between their performances. And I think that they would probably be better served with two more evenly matched sides, but we don't know what sort of contractual arrangements have been put in place. So
an Adelaide Derby over there would be sensational. You'd definitely tune in for that.
Oh, 100%. I can only hope that the Gold Coast come to play and that they perform well, and that it's a competitive match. That's sort of what I'm hoping for, because really, if they don't, I just can't see how this experiment is going to go on for a hell of a lot longer if we see a repeat of what we saw last year.
Well, it's a bit similar to what happened over in New Zealand when Sydney gave St Kilda an absolute whacking the second time around, and I think people over there just didn't turn up and there was no interest. So it's definitely a very good doomsday scenario. If they don't perform, there's not going to be any interest. Look, Heather, it has been fantastic having you on again. Thank you so much for coming on the Swanscast Extra Weekend Preview Show.
Thanks for inviting me, Justin. It's always a really good chat, and I hope everyone tunes in or turns up for the game on Saturday night. Yeah,
absolutely. Get to the ground. It's Red Sydney Week or something like that, so make sure you get to the ground, wear your red, cheer the Swans, and let's hope that they win. Now, look, as always, you can find us on social media. We are on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter with the tag The Swans Blog, and you can always get in touch with us using the hashtags SwansCast for Monday shows and SwansCast Extra for Thursday shows. We'll be back on Monday. We're actually going to have AFL journalist Adam Curley with us for a quick 10-minute update, so stay tuned for that. We're really excited for it. And until next time, go Swans.
Go Swans.